But next we have Movie Moles Fran Michel and Joe Clement. They review Charles Burnett's 1994 film, The Glass Shield.
Good morning. This is Fran Michel here with Joe Clement to discuss The Glass Shield, a 1994 film directed and co-written by Charles Burnett, available streaming on Netflix or for DVD rental from Movie Madness in Portland. The film begins with comic book images of a heroic black cop taking down a couple of white criminals, the kind of fantasies initially held about his career by rookie J.J. Johnson, played by Michael Boatman. But the story, or backstory, begins with the death of a young man in police custody in what the cops say is an accident or suicide. With the man's parents and local activists demanding an investigation, though, the station grabs some public relations cover by finally hiring its first African-American. So, over the slow-motion celebration of JJ's graduation from the academy, we hear that he's been recruited to integrate the precinct. The other outsider rookie is Fields, a Jewish woman played by Lori Petty, who irritates her bosses by pointing out crime scene details that undermine the story of a wealthy white man who claims his wife was shot and killed by a black man in a failed carjacking. But JJ really wants to be one of the guys, so he backs up a fellow cop by lying that there was a reason other than racial profiling for stopping and searching the car of a young man played by Ice Cube. When JJ realizes that records have been altered to suggest the gun found in the man's car was the one used in the white woman's murder, he and Fields begin digging deeper into the corruption around them. The Glass Shield has lots of plot, drama, suspense, and nuance, and resonance with recent events and long-standing patterns, but not much in the way of car chases, violence, or profanity. So I think I like this film a little bit better than you did, Joe.
Yeah, but I did not entirely dislike it. I found it hard to get into because of how much of the plot is, you know, hidden in backstory and is only revealed at crucial moments if you happen to be paying very close attention to certain exchanges. And until you get to the very end, there is a lot of sympathy for policing as an institution. It is corrupt, though, and there is kind of this minimum of an idealism about, you know, the existence of this institution in our society that the outsider characters still kind of cling to, but don't really come to openly question during the movie.
It's true. It's true that it's kind of plot heavy, which also gives it the opportunity to bring in references to all kinds of horrible patterns like white people scapegoating black people and planting evidence and fudging evidence and racial profiling and all sorts of things. And it's true that there is a kind of legalistic bent in terms of solving the problems that get exposed, and this is a particularly bad precinct. They've got a lot of especially illegal shenanigans going on that suggests that it's not just policing in general, but I think there are actually hints that it's policing in general or the institution of the police as we know it. Everybody around JJ, his family and friends, seem to be pretty skeptical of his choice of career. So I think there's that. And I think we do see pretty pervasive, even if not always overt and explicit, racism throughout the behavior of the white cops in this precinct.
Well, what I mean is that in the characters themselves, there's not that much reflection on what they're even doing with their lives. They, you know, take on the mantle of, you know, being the insiders who, like, do the dirty work inside the dirty institution of, you know, whistleblowing. And there's, you know, this urge to recuperate the institution there. But yeah, all the characters outside of those people actually in the institution and invested in it clearly show signs of disinterest at best, if not kind of concern. But there are lots of ways that JJ's character in particular shows this excess of being more ethical than the institution that they're in. And so even if they're not kind of critically disidentifying with it, there are ways in which just their character, that what's going on screen, like, makes them incompatible with it, and they're having to learn that.
Yeah, and I think even if the character JJ is extremely naive, implausibly naive even for an African American, even in 1994, especially perhaps in 1994, that the film itself is much more savvy than he is, and is partly about his this the arc of his disillusionment. And that is facilitated by his solidarity with the other rookie cop, who's a white woman, and the one other cop who is, interestingly, has been read by you, by some reviewers. Like, some people, I guess, have read him as coded as gay. Some people have read him as Latino. He's white, but he's on his own. He's just kind of laying low and trying not to make waves or get in any more trouble than he already has. But it's only when he's in solidarity with other cops who are dissident on the force that he's willing to take a stand and testify honestly and do the right thing.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I liked a lot about the film, is the fact that they work together, and that's how they're actually accomplishing anything. And in a way, you know, they are being coded as like these different identity groups, and there being this sense of shared struggle that they're working with.
And I think that we were talking earlier about whether the film really portrays the problems of racism in the police force as fully as it might. But I think that it's actually pretty subtle in the way that it brings in problems of racism and sexism, and the ways that those things get cross-coded with sort of male bonding and white male bonding. We see at one point the white officers coming together and having a birthday party for one of the sergeants or whatever his title is, and they give him a fishing pole as a present, and he gets all choked up and starts weeping. And it's this weird moment, because we know that all of these guys are planting evidence and blackmailing people and on the take and doing awful stuff. But, you know, they've clearly got this really strong bond, and they care about each other, and there's brotherhood. So it's an interesting acknowledgement of the ways that groups form partly by excluding others, but that they have these real sort of strong emotional connections.
It humanizes them, but I think that this particular group formation and the kinds of bonds that it makes, not one that I have a lot of sympathy with. I hope a lot of people don't, that it's actually kind of the wrong group formation. It's the one where, in JJ's case, he breaks his fidelity to, you know, the wider purpose of whatever he thinks law enforcement is, what peacekeeping is. He keeps referring to himself as a peace officer, whereas the people in this group see themselves as guardians against evil.
Indeed. It's a really creepy moment when he's weeping over the fishing pole, and Fields and Johnson are standing outside and looking on at this scene, and she says, "So what did you get him for a present?" And then there's sort of acknowledgement of how excluded they are and how their exclusion is part of the bonding among these other guys.
They make fun of this, too, especially when it comes to JJ finding his place within that kind of pecking order. There's some outlandish prep that he does in a car on a way to a call. And his partner even asks, you know, "What the hell are you doing?" And he's like, "I'm just getting ready."
He's getting all pumped up and ready to attack someone and ready to be violent, because that's you know, he's ready for the excitement of the chase and the adventure and the thrill, which is precisely what the movie itself doesn't really give us. The kinds of things that people expect in shoot 'em up cop movies are not part of this movie. They're part of JJ's fantasy that is part of what's getting him in trouble by getting him involved in this horrible institution.
There are some gunshots, but I did notice and like how there were a number of instances where they would focus on the baton, and there being this certain kind of, well, yeah, it's a stick, and if you get hit with it, it hurts, and so we know it means force, but at the same time, it seems to dial back the potential of like force that they have. They're, you know, compared to the gun, at least, and to the, like, uncontrollable brutality of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is 1994, and the police are not quite as militarized as they have more recently become. So, and in the beginning, in the police academy, we see they're tossing their sticks up in the air, and the batons are sort of spinning in slow-mo in this weird romantic moment of celebration. I mean, I think that the film draws interestingly on a lot of different genres, refuting our expectations of police films and giving us that sort of the slow-mo romanticism of his idea of being a policeman, the comic book version, the film noir version of interrogating a suspect with blinds drawn. But JJ, in the interests of joining the force and trying to become part of this group that wants nothing to do with him, really, does, as you say, give into a betrayal of his ideals and fall victim to his own, to another form of racism, because he believes that this guy must be guilty. They said he's guilty. He must be. And so the assumption is that, I mean, and that the Ice Cube character is criminalized. And the film goes out of its way to everybody is very wholesome outside of the force. You know, he's there with his parents, and I mean, JJ himself has a very supportive family, and so there's, we do, and this is characteristic of Burnett's films, that we get a vision of wholesome black family life, juxtaposed against the problems of corrupt police, maybe not the corruption of the very notion of policing.
And the law itself, because, you know, they're not only the police officers, but there's this, you know, court-level apparatus that we are dealing with throughout the whole film, because it centers around a case. And Bernie Casey, the black lawyer, he is chastised lightly by the black preacher, who is kind of the figure of kind of activist, populist, do something about something sentiment in the film, as being both for getting the innocent off, but also the guilty.
Yeah, and I like that the film does have activists getting, you know, do interest in doing the right thing. I mean, we see people protesting and leafleting outside of this police station, and it's sort of idealized, but kind of nice that they actually do get some results. And at the end of the film, all of the good cops have left the force. We learned that, I mean, JJ can't continue being a cop, and Fields survives but leaves the force, and Foster as well. And we get some title credits at the very end suggesting, you know, the fate of the various characters and the comeuppance of the bad guys, which apparently was tacked on at the insistence of the producer and was not part of Burnett's vision for the film, which originally ended more tragically, more sadly, more poignantly, perhaps.
Yeah, and I didn't catch that the first time I watched it through, and so I felt like I watched two very different films because of that, when it ends with that sense of tragedy of the good guy doing everything absolutely right, and there just being no room for any sort of change, and succumbing to that, and kind of like realizing that they have to let go of this thing that they're trying to change. That was much more satisfactory, or made the film overall much more satisfactory. But then learning that the viewer is supposed to consider that none of this bad stuff really goes on, you know, or it doesn't go on for too long. There is that, you know, balance that comes out in the end.
The film is not, I think, as good as Burnett's 1977 film Killer of Sheep, which is included in the National Film Registry, is a really amazing independent production. That was his first feature film. And this one is clearly intended to be more mainstream and to appeal to a wider audience, but I think the prominent advertising with pictures of Ice Cube and the attempt to sell it as a conventional police film would have misled people into thinking they were going to get the kind of car chases and excitement and adventure that, as it turns out, is just a cartoonish illusion.
Well, this has been Joe Clement and Fran Michelle reviewing the 1994 film The Glass Shield, which deals with race and corruption in policing in America.